Lawmakers delay their upcoming special session. The first major federal gun bill in decades signed into law. Plus, new laws take effect and more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending July 1st, 2022.
Indiana Week in Review is made possible by the supporters of Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
Abortion will be legal in Indiana for at least another month after a special session for inflation relief and abortion has been delayed until July 25th. The governor last week called a special session for July 6th to enact his inflation relief proposal that sends $225 to anyone who filed taxes in Indiana last year. After the U.S. Supreme Court's ruling striking down abortion rights, the legislature was expected to include an abortion ban in that special session. They will, but not next week. In a statement, House Speaker Todd Houston says because of the increased agenda, leaders are anticipating a multi-week special session versus 1 or 2 days. For logistical reasons, he says, they decided to hold off starting their work until the last week of July. The Indiana Democratic Party accused Republicans of waiting for the dust to settle in the aftermath of the Supreme Court's ruling before trying to ban abortion.
Why the delay? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Joey Fox, John Schwanis, host of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly, editor-in-chief of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting digital editor Lauren Chapman, in for Brandon Smith this week. Ann Delaney, lawmakers have had at least 2 months since the Supreme Court ruling on abortion was leaked to prepare for this. Why the delay?
Well, they have different caucuses within the Republican caucus. They have the absolutely crazy part of their caucus. They have a little bit in the middle. Actually, it's really just the crazies and the little bit in the middle. And you're going to have Republican legislators who are going to argue that abortion is murder and it should be illegal in every circumstance. It doesn't matter whether it's incest or rape or the life or health of the mother. It doesn't matter. And they're going to want the most egregious kind of legislation like Texas or Missouri has. And then you have people that are a little bit more moderate and say, well, maybe we ought to carve out a few exceptions for the horrific crimes of rape and incest and the life of the mother. So they can't reconcile that. I mean, if abortion is murder, as some of them believe, then the fetus is a person from conception, which kind of begs the question of why the child, why there aren't domestic support orders for that baby from the time it's conceived until it's delivered. But anyway, I mean, we're going to have situations where you're going to have 12-year-old girls, the victim of incest, and being told to carry the child to term or go to juvie. And you're going to have older girls that are raped and told that, you know, they're murderers if they don't carry that fetus to term. It is unconscionable that they are forcing their religious views on the population of Indiana when the population of Indiana doesn't agree with those absolute positions they take. But they're going to do it anyway. And I think what they're trying to do is to come to a consensus among themselves as to what this legislation would look like going forward. Good luck with that.
Joey, I mean, that kind of talking about that consensus, earlier this week, I believe Governor Holcomb said that there wasn't really any red line for him. What can we expect out of Republicans?
Well, I think what you should be heartened by here is that this process, beginning when Roe v. Wade was decided, has been democratic since that day. We've spent decades of elections talking about this issue with winning majorities time and time and time again, and eventually at the Supreme Court level through the nominees and the Senate Republican caucuses, have now given the opportunity for this question to be decided at a Democratic level by the state. I think the fact that this is going to be delayed a couple more weeks to debate what are truly life and death issues is to the credit of the Republican leadership, and that we should have this debate at a local level where it belongs, like it did from 40 years ago.
Well, if they wanted to have the debate, they ought to take these sessions around the state, and they ought to get input from people in the state about what they want to see. They're not doing that. They're going to make these decisions like they make all the important decisions behind closed doors once they get their consensus together. And that's what this is all about. It has nothing to do with fairness, and has nothing to do with democracy. The gerrymandering that's occurred, the gerrymandering that's occurred in that legislature guarantees that you're going to have abortions restricted Or outlawed, and it doesn't matter what the voters want at all.
Oh, pick your argument.
Pick your argument.
No, you're going in circles.
No, because, I'm not.
Yes, your arguments are circular here. Gerrymandering, right? Uh-huh. Draw me enough Democrats together that would pass your other test for map lines, right? Which are, well, is it compact?
But your argument is that your decisions are made behind closed doors with no real debate. That's what happens.
These are the elected officials.
John Schwanis, I mean, let's talk a little bit about some of the transparency. A couple of things have been shopped out that Republicans are creating this extra space in order to have longer times to listen to folks. I mean, do you think that this delay will lead to any level of transparency?
Well, I think this is unfolding on two different levels, and we've heard both sort of layers right now, and I don't think they're both right or both wrong, and here's what I mean by that. Certainly, the optics of any legislative deliberative body would be enhanced by following the rules set forth by those bodies, and a 1 or 2 day special session would have required, by definition, a suspension of the rules that the House and Senate put in place ostensibly to guarantee public input, to guarantee that members actually know what it is they're voting for, because it's hard, depending on the length of the bill and any nuances. You know, we've seen bills rush through before and oftentimes with ill effect. And then you layer in the notion of public input. So optically, I think this is better. But let's not kid ourselves. Clearly, I think, as Ann does, that there is dissension within the ranks, and not surprisingly. I mean, it's a big caucus. It's a super majority, which means you have lots of views. And we've seen articulated already in interviews Republican members of the caucus saying they favor exceptions for rape, incest, or the health of the mother. Others saying no. And I think Republicans have fallen into the habit of making decisions behind closed doors. Again, I'm sure if Democrats had a supermajority, they would be want to do the same. But I think the Republicans, if possible, would like to hash this out, kind of keep the ugliness of the debate behind closed doors so that they can come forth with a more or less unified front, so that when they do solicit the public input and they do go through the niceties of a transparent process, it just seems neater and cleaner. So I think you're both right to a certain extent.
Thanks, John. Okay.
Nikki, I mean, do we have any idea of what legislation will look like from lawmakers?
We don't, and they're not talking, you know, and they're not answering phone calls. They're giving the platitudes of protecting life and not getting into the details. And as we all know, the devil's in the details.
They also talk about protecting the health of women.
Yes,
so, I mean, yeah.
That gives you a lot of wiggle room.
While everyone's now considering this an abortion special session, it was originally called for a taxpayer refund. And I frankly am hearing more dissension on that issue than I am the abortion issue. The Senate especially is pushing back on the idea of a second refund. So there might be a little bit more talking going on that topic than just the abortion.
That makes a ton of sense. Well, this week, President Joe Biden signed into law the first major gun safety legislation passed by Congress in nearly 30 years. Indiana's Republican U.S. senators split on the bill, with Todd Young voting in favor and Mike Braun voting against. The legislation includes incentives for states to pass so-called red flag laws that allow groups to petition courts to remove weapons from people deemed a threat to themselves or others. Indiana already has one. The bill expands an existing law that prevents people convicted of domestic abuse from owning a gun to including dating partners rather than just spouses and former spouses. And it expands background checks on people between the ages of 18 and 21 seeking to buy a gun. In a statement after voting for the measure, Todd Young said, "We don't have to choose between protecting Second Amendment rights and keeping guns away from those who might be a danger to themselves or others. We can and should do both." Joey Fox, are you surprised by Young's vote?
No. I think the quote that you played there at the end, thought you can protect the Second Amendment and you can be responsive to your constituents at the same time, mm-hmm. on what they want. I think certainly the addition of red flag laws in this is probably one of the most significant pieces in the kind of comprehensive studies that they've done of different pieces of potential gun control measures and legislation. Almost all of them were found to do practically nothing on the mass shooting front. What there weren't enough data on yet, though, were red flag laws, which, as a Second Amendment supporter, are much preferable to some of the other provisions that you could choose amongst from that kind of menu of options, because they have judicial kind of outlines to them. There's a process, and there has to be real evidence, and you have the opportunity to get rights restored. It's a much more fair process and less draconian than many Democrats would have preferred.
I mean, may I push back, though, for a moment on Indiana's red flag law? I mean, we just have the recent example of the FedEx shooting, that red flag laws in Indiana failed to do anything. So, I mean...
Well, when the Marion County prosecutor refuses to use them. I mean, I can't speak.
He doesn't refuse to use them.
Plenty of laws that the Democrats refuse to enforce and then get mad when ones they disagree with are enforced.
You know, it's not surprising you voted for this since it doesn't do anything. I mean, the only significant thing that it does is include boyfriends in the domestic violence situation. That's the only significant thing. The red flag laws don't work. Okay, you have 48 hours to notify the judge. Okay, in the meanwhile, in that 48 hours, you can go buy another gun. Okay, and then the judge has to set it for a hearing, and that could be 30 days. And meanwhile, nothing happens in the NCIC, and you can go out and buy a gun, or you can buy a gun in Indiana at any of the non-federally licensed gun dealers. Okay, so you can get all the guns you want. This is the least that they could possibly do while looking like they're doing something. If they wanted to do something, you wouldn't have 18-year-olds be able to buy assault weapons when they can't buy a beer, okay? And what's happening here and why Young voted for it is because people are recognizing the fact that the NRA has controlled legislation in this area, and now with the Trump appointees to the Supreme Court, you have your police officers at risk with concealed weapons every place. No local community can pass a law that deals effectively with gun control, and it's all due to the Republicans being controlled by the NRA. And people are upset about it. I'm starting to see signs about protect children, not guns, because they've gone too far. When we had the assault weapons ban, we didn't have a fraction of these mass shootings that we had. And what do? They get control of the Congress, and they repeal it. They're going to do the same thing if they get control of the Congress this time. Not only is it gun control, but they're going to outlaw abortion across the country. That's exactly what they do. They're so extreme.
Nikki Kelly, Mike Braun obviously voted against this. Is that in any way, shape, or form a surprise?
No, I wasn't surprised by that at all. I was a little more surprised by Todd Young's vote, though he has shown, you know, more penchant to kind of move away from the hardline Republican stances than Mike Braun has. So I don't think it will impact either of them, obviously, this year. And some people might point to Braun's vote as shoring up support for any possible future run in case he decides not to seek re-election.
John Schwanis, I mean, does this legislation really say anything about the current state of especially Indiana's delegation, but moreover, the United States' appetite for any sort of gun legislation?
Or the Congress's appetite.
I think there is a recognition on the part of Republican strategists, and let's use Mitch McConnell, the Senate Majority Leader, Minority Leader as an example. I think this was a political calculation largely on his part. This is a guy who has a career-long A-plus rating from the NRA. And he said, though, about this framework, this legislation that emerged, that it is common sense, it will help protect the innocent, and at the same time preserve very much and in its entirety the Second Amendment. So he gave political cover to other people, and I think part of that calculation was that what sells in a primary or you know the notion of who's going to be the nominee of a given party is somewhat a different exercise compared with facing the entire electorate in a state like Indiana, where it, as is the case with virtually every other state in the country, has had misfortune and has experienced tragedies with mass shootings. And I think I haven't seen any recent polling after the most recent tragedy, but I think it's safe to say that Hoosiers probably, while they're are willing to zealously, as a whole, guard the Second Amendment, they also recognize that there perhaps should be some exceptions, just as there might be with the issue we just talked about,
maybe,
with abortion.
Maybe not assault weapons, maybe not magazines that with, you know,
well,
hundreds
to the extent that it's surprising, you know, most of the Republicans who, among the 15 that threw their support to this, are people who are either retiring, mm-hmm. you know, are already out of the mix, or not up right now. So to the extent that it's a surprise, I guess the surprise is two things. One, he was very cagey about this, Todd mm-hmm. Young was. You know, interviews up until the 24 hours before, he's still, maybe I will, maybe I won't, maybe I will. Mm-hmm. That's one. And then number two, he's one of only two members of the Senate who actually are going to be on the ballot this next November mm-hmm. and still took this position. So a little surprising, but I think for reasons articulated here, it makes sense for him. He hasn't been as beholden to the party line as
he
some.
He takes a lot of money from the NRA, though.
Well, he has an A-plus, too. I don't know if he'll keep his A-plus.
Yeah, sure he does. They all do.
Now time for our viewer feedback. Each week we pose an unscientific online poll question. This week's question, are you surprised U.S. Senator Todd Young voted in favor of the bipartisan Senate gun bill? Vote A, yes, or B, no. Last week's question, was Diego Morales' win at the GOP convention a rebuke of Governor Eric Holcomb? 71% of you voted yes, 29% voted no. If you'd like to take part in our poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. A lot of viewers and listeners have questions about Indiana's new permitless handgun carry law, which takes effect this week. Indiana Public Broadcasting's Brandon Smith answers some of the most common about what the law does and doesn't do.
Previously, if you wanted to carry a handgun in public in Indiana, you needed to get a permit from the state to do so. Starting Friday, you no longer need that permit. The new law does not impact background checks when you buy a gun. If someone purchases a gun from what's known as an FFL or Federal Firearms License dealer, they undergo a background check. That's the majority of gun purchases. However, if you buy a gun in a private sale from someone who's not an FFL dealer, there is no background check, and without the carry permit requirement, there would no longer be any background check before carrying a handgun in public. The law also doesn't impact open versus concealed carry in Indiana. The permit system allowed you to carry a handgun in public whether you did it openly or concealed it. The new law simply means people can carry their handgun in public without a permit, whether open or concealed.
Nikki Kelly, do you think most people will notice the law has changed?
No, I mean, I think there's probably a small number of people who will be excited to be able to carry without the permit. As long as they are still considered a proper person, those rules still apply. I think the people who will really notice are the police officers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And every time they pull someone over, you know, I think if there was ever concern about a handgun being in the car or question, you know, they could always at least check if there was a permit. Now they don't have that as sort of a background.
Right.
And I think that's why many police organizations were against the bill to begin with.
Yeah.
John Schwanis, I actually worked at a public library when Indiana's open carry laws went into effect and extended to libraries. Do you think people are going to notice this change in law?
I think Nikki's assessment is right on. If you carry a badge and a gun and you're sworn to uphold the laws in our state and you're empowered to make arrests of bad guys and bad people, you care significantly. I think the other people maybe who would care more than the average Hoosier would be event organizers where you have festivals, where you have large events for celebrations or, frankly, any kind of gathering of a lot of people. If you own property and all of a sudden you're wondering now who am I, you know, I'm assessing a crowd of several hundred. In my mind, I'm imagining how many of these people, you know, if you ran them through a magnetometer, would be going beep, 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 beep. And so I think it probably affects that kind of individual. For the most part, I presume, since what this really does affect would be the concealed carry as opposed to others,
because it's all treated the same. It's just the permit.
Indiana right. doesn't have open or concealed. It just has.
Well, it has
carry.
Nothing now.
Yeah.
Right, right. Well, I mean, it's constitutional.
There are
carry.
Still rules about carrying a gun.
But I think for the most part, except for people who are trying to make a point, we've seen that, you know, where somebody marches into the festival with a long gun. Mm-hmm. Most people are not brandishing it until
they
need it. So I don't think that most Hoosiers probably will notice it, at least in the short term.
Police budgets may, though.
Well, the number of special education teachers in Indiana has declined by about 1,000 over the last decade. At the same time, they're serving more and more students. From WFYI's education desk, Dylan Piers McCoy reports that district administrators are trying to chip away at the shortage by training their own educators.
Indiana schools are in a scramble to hire enough special education teachers after the state eliminated emergency permits for educators who are not fully qualified. A new training program aims to fill the gap. It will prepare current educators for long-term licenses in special education. Jay Arthur is the program director and a former superintendent.
These are folks who have already been in the seat as a teacher or an educator. They have experience. They just don't have the right credential.
The 11-month program is free for educators. Participants will work as special education teachers throughout the school year. They'll also attend a boot camp and monthly classes.
John Schwannis, we don't exactly have a surplus of teachers in general. Are we risking exacerbating one shortage to help solve another?
I suppose you could make that argument, but these are kids who have special needs, mm-hmm. and therefore they require instruction from individuals with a level of expertise and credentials to prove it that separates them from, quote-unquote, the typical classroom teacher. There's a need. So, sure. I mean, you got to address the need. Will it take a limited, already too limited pool of individuals and further exacerbate the problem? Mm-hmm. Maybe it will, but what's the alternative? I mean, it's if we are truly committed to education for all Hoosier children.
We could pay them more and recruit them that way.
I thought you might say that. So I was letting you get into that.
That's a tough job being a special education teacher.
It certainly is, yeah.
It is a tough job, and that's why this governor, unless you had done more new education funding with Republican supermajorities than any other governor, we're still below where we need to be.
I mean, and particularly with special education teachers, we have to make it desirable. We're getting to the point where we're comparable just barely with some of the states around us, but we're not superstars in this
regard. And even when you do hit some whatever imaginary threshold, that doesn't solve the problem because if you look at the data, the turnover rate and the burnout rate among special ed
very high.
Teachers is much higher.
This
is a hard job, but we spend more per student than ever in this state. And so we've got to be careful about trying to make the argument that the only thing that solves education problems is more dollars.
It's not the only thing, but it is a big thing.
But at the same point, just saying we spend more than we did before doesn't mean it's enough.
That's exactly right.
No, my friend Ann Delaney's first response is always more money.
No, it's not. But I want
that
teachers.
That was your first response, John.
Well, I want teachers paid comparable to their education and the product they're delivering. And special education teachers ought to have a bonus beyond that. And we're not doing enough on that.
And last I checked, the basic, economic policies apply here, which is if you have a shortage of something, you raise the pay.
Somehow it gets filled. Right. Yeah. But not with the Republican mantra.
Well, that's why local school boards decide compensation and not the governor. You guys do not want the governor deciding individual teacher compensation.
No, but we want them to put enough money in there that the locals have the option of paying them enough.
Well, the governor has essentially waded into that debate enough to say there's a threshold I would like you to maintain. And if you don't, you have to explain to your constituency
why it's not. The next time a governor gets elected you disagree with, and then they're making the other decisions, then you're in trouble, right?
Finally, a new law that took effect this week bans people who own bears or big cats, lions, tigers, leopards, and the like, from allowing the public to have physical contact with those animals. Ann Delaney, why are lawmakers infringing on my God-given millennial right to be mauled by a lion?
You know, Lauren, that's a really good question. I frankly think this is Darwinism at its best, okay? If you're dumb enough to go starting to pet a lion, a tiger, or a bear, hey, we don't want that gene pool polluting the rest of it.
I hate to point out on a serious level that this was obviously targeted at roadside or small zoos that literally raise cubs up to let people pet them for hundreds of dollars, mm-hmm. and then they basically kill the tigers when they get too big and they're not cuddly anymore. And so there was a reason behind the bill.
Absolutely. John Schwannis, shouldn't we be allowed to pet lions and tigers and bears, oh my?
I haven't looked at the libertarian platform on this issue, if it's silent or directly addresses the feline interaction. You're a cat owner. You're a cat owner. I used to be, and I'm a dog owner now. But I do remember my first cat was so vicious in a small package that it might have constituted a violation of this statute.
Did you ever think it might have been you?
I might have had that effect on
that's
it, too.
That was my cat for me this week.
See, oh, no. So this is why, see, all politics is local. This is what we're talking about.
This is the kind of work that, you know, our lawmakers are working to address.
But we'll never have
and
our
they
chance.
Are so much more worried about the rights of animals than they are about the
But this is an economic development issue. We'll never have our Joe Exotic. What was his name?
Well,
Joe
that's Joe the reason we have Joe the bill, because we did have our own Joe Exotic.
Yeah, but I didn't see any Netflix series on our Joe Exotic.
It was in that series. It was literally in that series.
I guess I need to watch Joe Exotic.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Joey Fox, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and Nikki Kelly of the Indiana Capital Chronicle. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at wfyi.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the WFYI app. I'm Lauren Chapman of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
The opinions expressed are solely those of the panelists. Indiana Week in Review is a WFYI production in association with Indiana's public broadcasting stations.